one of the participants asked, what will be the impact of the rapid changes in the world economy on the demand and supply of credit to agriculture?
I think one of the things that you've already seen, credits being kind of rationed out there, John, and the other thing that the implication is going to be as credit is rationed, and also as more and more of our banks and the farm credit system have tighter oversight, one of the things that you're going to see is the credit will be available, but one of the things that's going to happen is they're going to require stronger financials. They're going to require that you have a business plan. One of the things that is going to be very important is if you do not have the business plan and you don't have those financials, you're probably going to have to pay higher interest rates. And so I find that right now another implication that's happening is we're finding that credit is on shorter terms. In other words, shorter terms and variable rates, because if we go out at the long end of the curve, we're finding so much uncertainty out there that lenders are not going to go out there 20 years, 30 years fixed rate. And if they do, a producer is going to pay a much higher price. And that's the implication that we see from these global economic tsunamis that seem to be hitting us. So to summarize and confirm, more financial rigor is going to be required from the customer. And then the second thing is probably shorter terms, and also more agricultural producers are going to be encouraged to go to a variable rate, which that sensitivity analysis pertaining to cash flow as it relates to interest rate levels, John, is going to be very critical as you examine the potential risk in decision making. Next question.
Yeah, you're seeing we're multitasking. We got a poll coming up here, but I'm not sure that the answer to this question is any different, but it might be, and it's related, and it is the availability of funds or market volatility causing reduced credit availability to ag?
Okay, market volatility. I think it's a combination of both, okay? And I would have to say there's probably some other things that I'm overlooking right here, John. But number one, the availability of funds or the availability of funds, the actual funds is impacting us. But the market volatility is definitely impacting us because you have organizations or institutions like a vertical integrator like Pilgrim's Pride go down, or you have VeriSun who had its financial challenges. That market volatility right there throws up a red flag to a lender. And so one of the things that I would suggest to you on the income and the cost side, we have that volatility. But, you know, one of the things that has been a great saving for us has been the stability of the land values. And, of course, you're doing the survey. And so that has allowed us for some lenders to stay into the marketplace because we still have a strong balance sheet. And I think it's actually the combination of these two factors has really been kind of a blessing in disguise, because we're getting back to old school lending practices. In other words, can a person pay it back? Are they profitable? Do they have solid character? And so one of the things, a lot of people would look at these as negatives. I kind of look at it as a positive. And it also is a teachable moment for risk management education for the agricultural producer, because we have their attention, John.
The next question shifts a bit, and it relates to water supply. And the question, which my part of the screen, which has the question on, has just gone blank, so I'm remembering this. It's what do you think the impact of water supply for barrels will be? And will it have an impact how our lenders look at it?
Yeah. I'll just make this comment that As we look down the road, John, water will replace oil as the precious commodity, particularly in the western part of the United States, but we've also seen it occur here in the eastern part of the United States as well. It's going to be one of those components as we look at a risk assessment of a borrower that is going to be of high priority. And of course, we're probably going to have water wars as we go out. We're already having them in California, but in other areas down in Georgia, we had water wars as well. And one of the things that I would just suggest is that water is going to be a even more powerful component in the whole overall risk management component as lenders look at it and examine it. And it's not only water quantity, it's going to be water quality. John?
On Dave, this is Dwayne Griffin.
Okay, hey, I'll take the next question.
You want... I'm going to fill in if you can.
Let me continue questions,
yes,
Dwayne?
Yes, please. Well, we can work it with John.
Okay. What do I consider the three most critical sections of a business plan for a loan application?
That'd be great.
Actually, one of the things, I think a business plan has more than three sections, but it starts out with a vision, mission, your typical SWOT analysis, your goals and your objectives, but it also includes a financial plan, a marketing plan, an operational plan, a risk management plan, but it also includes an alternative plan and an exit plan. And I don't know if I can identify them, but if you can get people to start out and at least outline their goals and their objectives and get a marketing, finance, and risk management plan, we're halfway there on a business plan. You know what a number of producers will say? Well, I don't have time to do a business plan. Well, I was talking to a producer that spent 30 hours putting together a business plan, and he actually uses it. He's been using it for the past 8 or 9 years. And I asked the lender how much it saved him in interest rates. It saved him about 125 basis points. And on the loan, he had over $1 million in loan obligations. Well, you know, that's $12,500. You divide 30 hours into $12,500, that's a pretty good rate per hour. And so the business plan has many different components. It takes a while to do it, but the three, probably the most important, would be to establish those goals, but also establish your marketing, your finance, your risk management plan. But as probably Jay Pinnicle will say tomorrow, you can have a great plan, but you got to execute it. It's about like the Los Angeles Lakers versus the Orlando Magic tonight. You know, who executes the plan? Because they all know each other.
I think I'm back now on the audio. So you can probably see the next
John,
question
we
there.
Lost you there.
Yeah. I forgot the switch. What do you consider the... you just went through them. What are the noticeable differences in credit availability and requirements for operators of different scale? Thinking about small, medium, large.
Definitely as we go up toward larger farms, the information requirements are much higher. Matter of fact, I'm just going to say, and I'll be kind of opinionated here, you got a farm over $300,000-$400,000 worth of sales, you're going to have a cash to accrual income statement. Matter of fact, everybody says, well, I got to have an accountant prepared statement. Well, if you have an accountant prepared statement and haven't looked at the prepared statement or use it in the business planning, well, it's not of much use. Another thing that we're seeing more and more lenders require is a business plan, particularly for larger agriculture producers making major adjustments in their business. Matter of fact, RBC, Royal Bank of Canada, actually has a business plan quick format that they require, and many of the producers are finding it very, very useful in communicating with the lender, but also communicating with the partners. Another thing that we're seeing is if it's a complex entity with a number of entities, consolidated financial statements, but also statements on the individual entities. We're also seeing more and more lenders request personal financial statements to see what the personal obligations of individual producer is out there. On the smaller credits, or where the sales are under, $100,000, that personal financial statement is very, very important. But more and more lenders kind of want some idea of what they're going to do with the money. So having a good mind around what the producer is trying to achieve and accomplish is very important. Also, make sure that the smaller producer has good, strong credit scores. By the way, the credit scores have been down 40 points because more credit card companies are cutting back on the lines of credit and the amount available on credit cards. And so that's something that is needed. And then verification of employment, very, very critical, particularly that 70 to 80% are very dependent on off-farm income and dependent on those fringe benefits. So that's the dichotomy that I see. Of course, the tweener group in there, it depends on the amount borrowed. In other words, the ones that are right in between the big borrower and the small borrower, the amount borrowed, and the past degree of success of whether they go in one camp or the other camp.
There's a lot of I guess, speculate, actually more than speculation, feeling that inflation is coming. And how do we in agriculture prepare if that inflation is, in fact, coming?
Boy, that's a great question. Number one, if inflation comes, what's going to be a good investment? Of course, it'll be land, it'll be gold, it'll be hard assets. Whether you got inflation or a deflationary type of environment, one thing that's going to be very, very critical, and this is one thing that, having worked on the West Coast with a number of the lenders and over the years, working capital is going to be very, very critical in either type of environment. And one of the things that I would suggest is that I like to see a target, a metric of at least 30% of revenue. Of course, that's one of the recommendations of the Farm Financial Standards Council, of 30% of revenue in net working capital. Because one of the things that will happen in an inflationary environment, you'll have to move very, very fast, move very, very quickly. And having that working capital reserve, it's almost like your financial shock absorber and allows you to get through the tough times, but it also positions you to capitalize should an opportunity come down the pike. Also, for the smaller farms in here and people that deal with the smaller farms, keeping, and Dr. Alex White teaches personal financial management here at Virginia Tech, you know, keeping 6 to 9 months of your income in financial liquidity is very, very critical. A few years ago, we used to call 2 to 4 months, but a loss of a job or something like that, whether you got a deflation, inflationary environment, that is something that's very, very critical. And as if we move toward an inflationary type of environment, one thing we have to be really careful of in an expansion plan, and say you were expanding your business, you can have tremendous cost overruns, or you can have tremendous overruns on input costs. So then that requires that three-prong risk management program from the revenue side, from the cost side, and the interest rate side. And don't forget interest rates, because they will go up in an inflationary environment. And this is where you have to do your spreadsheet financial analysis to see how much of an interest rate increase a business could handle without disrupting normal operations. So that was a long answer to a short question, but that's a big issue that's coming up.
We're probably going to take about three more questions. They just keep coming in here. One that came in from...
Yeah, I know. We could probably go here till...
Yeah, we could just keep going. They're really interesting, good. The responses are marvelous. Can you address labor in the overall ag picture and how U.S. agriculture, fruits, vegetables, etc., will fare in a world economy? And this is a question that came from Seattle.
Yeah, I think one of the things is, as we look at labor and address labor, and of course, whether you're talking about labor offshore or domestic labor, I'm a big believer that this is going to be one of the bigger risk components of a successful business moving on to the future, because all we got to do is change immigration laws, or and of course, in the northwestern part of the state or part of the United States, minimum wage laws, that throws the whole financial context upside down. And so, labor and risk management is going to be real critical. I have to speak to this though on the workforce. I have the 40-20-40 rule. As far as labor is concerned, and this includes young labor, 40% you don't want. And I'm not being politically correct, in a sense they feel entitled. 20% are on the borderline, but then there's the other 40% that you really want and need in an agricultural operation. They're going to know technology, but they're going to have a high emotional intelligence. They're going to have old-timey work habits, and you can't afford to pay those workers too much, but you can afford to pay the others too much. And so seeking out good, strong, highly qualified labor and being aware of some of the changes that are happening via state, regional, national, or international as far as the amount and supply of labor is going to be real, real critical. And then the other element that's coming at us is, many of the people that are coming out of our high schools, et cetera, are lacking as far as some of the education. We're starting to see it at the university level. You're seeing it at the vocational and technical schools. So having a labor educational program is going to be a very important part of the risk management component.
There are a number of mutually owned ventures, cooperatives, in ag. How do you think they're going to fare in these capital markets?
Well, I think, many of the well-run cooperatives that have a sound business plan, execute, have a strong capital position, do the same thing that we'll do as agricultural producers, prepare for, stress tests and but what if analysis. They're going to do quite well. Those that, I'm going to step on some toes here, that operate as kind of the good old boy network, that don't do sound business planning, and have some strong egos that kind of run those cooperatives, whether it's at the board level or at the management level, they're probably going to be challenged just a little bit. And some of the attributes that we apply to our agriculture producers can be applied right to our cooperatives. I'm a big believer that there's a sound future for the cooperatives, but also they're going to have to operate as a business 364 days a year, and as a cooperative 1 day a year. And if it's leap year, just add the extra day. So that's
okay. Two last questions. I'll present them both to you. I know we were two before, but they keep coming in and they're good. The first one is, you've talked about adequate working capital. Can you give some advice, some rules of thumb on what is adequate working capital? And then I'll let you close with the real crystal ball question. When will the price of milk rebound?
Oh boy, let's hit the first one. Maybe I'll forget the second one. But let's hit the working, we got to have a little humor here. But on the working capital, remember, that's current assets minus current liabilities. And say you have 200,000 of current assets, 100,000 of current liabilities, it's 100,000 net working capital. And if you had 500,000 in revenue, you'd be 20% working capital. Now, when that ratio is less than 10%, you're extremely vulnerable. Macroeconomic shocks or shocks in the business, you're going to have a sound risk management program. If a business is thinking about expanding, then I like to see the net working capital at least north of 25%, 30%, because, and particularly in inflationary times, because of concrete, steel, all those types of things can go up and go up very, very fast and wipe out the working capital types of positions. So if I could give you an analogy of a stoplight, less than 10% is red light, 10 to 30 is kind of the yellow light range, and above 30% would be kind of the green light range. And everybody will say, well, it's not necessary on certain commodities. It sure is. Anybody in the poultry industry now realizes how important working capital, or the dairy industry, how important. It used to be dairy prices would move, $2 a hundred weight. Now they're moving $12 a hundred bit weight. And remember that working capital is, and particularly the larger the operation, but even smaller operations, it's that shock absorber. And John, what will happen is there tends to be a desire to spend that working capital. In other words, the money burns holes in the pocket. We will tend to go out and minimize taxes. We will invest it into a fixed asset. So it takes a lot of discipline to do that. But one of the things that I've learned, particularly over onto the West Coast, but it happens all across the country, working capital is king, but it's working capital is very critical for a young and beginning farmer who has not built up a lot of equity. And if you don't have a lot of equity, the higher that working capital percentage has to be. As far as milk prices are concerned, again, I'm not a dairy milk price expert, but I am in the dairy business. We're value added, so it makes us a little bit different in this. But it's probably going to be a later fall, winter is what I'm hearing, before we're going to see a substantial turnaround. In other words, many dairymen are weathering the storms, by delaying purchases, expenses, accounts payables are starting to go up. But eventually, if they don't improve, particularly as we go into 2010, then it could be very, very critical to our dairy industry. So I'm not, John, and I hope people will respect, I'm not a milk marketing pricing expert, just a more of an ag finance economist. But I know in our business, we aren't looking for a turnaround until later on this year and into 2010.
Any final thoughts for our folks from around the country that are listening in?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me on this program, and hopefully I'll see quite a few of you as I travel around the country. A couple of final thoughts is, this volatility is not going to go away. And this is an excellent time for risk management education, whether you're a lender, you're an educator, or an agribusiness person, or an agriculture producer. The volatility is going to really require substantial planning. Second thing is, think globally, act locally. Things that are going to happen around the globe are going to come right back. The impact our input costs, our revenues, our interest rates. And so we have to keep an eye on the global type of context. And again, there's many resources and readings out there that will help you be able to do that. And one of the things that I will often hear people say is that, well, I can't plan in this type of environment. Well, this is the type of environment where planning's not an option. It's a requirement. And I think it takes teamwork. I think it takes teamwork between the educators, the lenders, between the agriculture producers. And one of the things that I would say, John, is it's good to have another set of eyes. I got three letters behind my name. But I still like to have the lender, another set of eyes, look at the financials of our business, but also look at and examine our financial plans. And so I see this period that's coming up, tremendous opportunities avail themselves, regardless of whether you're a lender, producer, or an academic in this type of environment. But it's going to take some good old school type of risk management practices, and then being able to follow through and execute on the plan. It's, you know, can you walk the talk and talk the talk? Execution is going to be the key. So, John, thank you very much for having me on the program. We went over about 15, 20 minutes. I hope that doesn't disappoint too many people. I'll look at the surveys as we go. On the land values, but also it'd be really interesting to survey people on what they see as the educational needs, because we've got people from all over the country.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cole. And for those of you who want to look at this again, I know I was challenged, things were put there that I'd like to go see. On your screen, you can see the website where the recordings of the webinars will be posted. It's also, we do want your continued involvement, and there's a place there for follow-up discussions and also input into future webinar topics. Don't forget, tomorrow, June 10th, 9 a.m. Pacific, same time, same place, sign up in the same way. We'll have three leading lenders, Jay Pinnock of the Northwest Farm Credit Association, Kurt Covington, Bank of the West, and Chris Beierhelm from the Farm Service Agency will bring their perspective on how the larger credit environment is impacting ag and things we ought to be looking for. There's a file showing up here that it's my understanding that this icon, if you will click on the Ag and Uncertain Times PDF, you can drag that right off to your desktop, and that gives you all of these web links so that you don't have to try to remember them, although they are in the email advertising that we sent out on this. So we really do hope you will join in the discussion afterwards and help us shape this series as we go forward. If you've had a chance now to drag that over, it should download automatically onto your computer. I'll wait just a second. And so it's,
I think they have to click on it and
tell me, go ahead, Dwayne.
They have to click on it new to save.
Yep.
Yeah, they have to click on the file.
Okay, click on the file, highlight it, and then do a save to my computer. So we'll see you tomorrow, same time, same web address. And thank you very much for participating. Your response to the poll was that the overwhelming majority found this a very real use to you, and that's what our goal is for this series. Thank you. See you tomorrow.